Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.
Blake, what's the most terrible time of the year?
The only thing guaranteed in life is death and taxes. And you only die once. Taxes come annually.
Welcome to the Church Gear Podcast, where we pull the tech out of the booth and onto the stage to share the most outlandish stories and hidden wisdom from the tech trenches. And now, here are your hosts.
I'm your host, Blake Hodges, a man who would rather suck on a live scorpion than answer another TurboTax question, and I'm here with my co-host who loves taxes and budgeting more than tacos and adventure, Toby Walters.
I wonder if, honestly, if I love tacos more or hate, like, taxes and financial realities more.
I'm gonna go bold here, and I'm going to say you hate taxes and financial realities. Like, if you had to do it, you didn't have anybody. Like, yeah. That would be...
I remember I did my taxes once, and I owed something like $900. And this was when I was 19 or 20 years old. And I was like, how do I owe $900? And I had to go on a payment plan. And then the next year, I think I made more money. And I had my friend's mom, who was an actual accountant, do them. And I got something like $400 back.
So I don't know if this is too personal to say, but you know how we had like three different W-2s this year. We were trying to figure out what to do. When I did our first iteration, I was getting like $800 back and I was stoked. We did the fix and I put the other W-2 in. I went down to negative $19. I was so sad. It doesn't make sense. It's a slot machine.
I know. And so taxes, I was specifically going to talk about. So the most terrible time of the year, obviously tax season, but also budgeting season. And Blake, do you and Allison, your wife, budget in your household, or do you just sort of like, you know, money comes in and you spend things?
Toby, when you like going to cocktail bars as much as me, you have to budget or you'll be in the poorhouse within 3 weeks. So yes, we got a little good budget app.
So Shelly and I we have tried to put together a budget before. And Blake, you know me, you wouldn't be surprised by this. My answer is always, instead of budgeting, how about I just like figure out a way to make more money? Like I'll just get another job. I'll just like sell a body part. It's cool. Like I'll find a way so that I don't have to budget.
I was wondering where your left ear had gone.
So at, you know, starting a company and as it's grown, as you have, you know, kindly begged for a departmental budget, like we here at Church Gear have had to figure out like, okay, how do you build a budget? How do you plan for things that you can't plan for? And I guess that's called a budget. But even when you budget, there's still stuff that comes up, like the forklift brakes and, you know, like random stuff.
What do you mean? Everyone got a budget? I sold my kidneys for this camera equipment.
I'm proud of you for that. That is like really, you know, the Church Gear DNA is what body part can I sell to meet budget this year?
It's to sell your DNA.
And I guess I could have kind of guessed that this is a big deal to a lot of people, but I really saw this last time I was down in Florida just a couple months ago visiting churches. And several church techs talk about in their family how big a fan they are of like Ramsey and the whole, you know, financial peace thing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, totally. And then I just casually mentioned, yeah, I sit behind Dave Ramsey at church. And it was like they freak out like it's the, you know, it's like I sit behind.
Well, they're probably excited that some money might fall out of his pocket.
You would think. But no, he generally has a pretty tight, not that he's not generous, but he's very like, well done with his money. How do people that are responsible with money say that they are responsible?
Only
with
people
money?
That have money know how to say it. That's why you and I are bumbling through this.
So yes, I sit right behind Dave Ramsey and you know, we've never talked about budgeting, but can you imagine if Dave came in and just like looked at the way that we did finances around here? He's like, he pats us on the head. He's like, I'm proud of you guys for trying.
And then he'd light us on fire.
A little bit. And I feel like for so many of our listeners, it's like, hey, you want to get into production? Like, here's your job. Here's this beautiful, you know, audio system, video system. Here's this fun, exciting, you know, Sunday morning experience. By the way, can you put together a budget for, you know, next year's expenditures, like, that terrifies me.
I feel a deep kinship with our production brothers in this, because when I had to do the marketing budget, I mean, that's all I talked about to Allison for a whole week. I was like, I don't want to think about this. It's so overwhelming. How do I anticipate something breaking in June of next year when it's Christmas right now?
And are we willing to say that we think it's a good idea to sell body parts to make budget? Or are we saying that might not be the best idea?
The better question is it to sell body parts or service? All right. Y'all know where that went.
Now, there was a point, like, we sell a lot of stuff on eBay. And there was a point where eBay had to make a, like, actual statement and put in their bylaws, you cannot sell body parts on eBay. Because somebody put their... I think they put it up for an auction, like their one of their kidneys.
One
or
of their
something.
Kidneys?
Early on in the days of
eBay.
You
know, that was me trying to get the budget for the camera equipment.
And I think, like, the bidding went up to some crazy amount before eBay caught it and, like, shut it down. And then they basically said, okay, new rule, no body parts on eBay.
Man, that sounds Halloween right there. Toby, we can cut this if this is not allowed, but I would love, since we're talking about money, for you to say the thing about, like, what kind of money you had that you said in leadership the other day. I thought that was really funny.
Oh, yeah. So we were talking about just NFL franchises and just the ridiculous value of these things these days. And so I forget how we got there, but I basically said, well, NFL owners can almost do whatever they want because they're worth billions of dollars. And somebody said, yeah, they have kind of like screw you money is how they phrased it. And I said, yeah, I don't have screw you money. I have lunch money.
Toby's got lunch money. Toby, if you've got lunch money, I have some 3 pennies and some dust.
So it's like, how do you create a budget when you have lunch money and an extra kidney?
You know, the only person on earth that could create a budget out of a kidney and some lunch money is the production director at Northside Christian Church and the top fan of the Aaron Rodgers fan club, Chris McDonald. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
Chris, are you in fact an Aaron Rodgers fan? Because I remember you're a Green Bay fan, right?
And would you sell your kidney to get it back?
This is the perfect question and setup because I actually had Aaron on my fantasy team this year. And that was a horrible decision.
Yeah.
I'm a Green Bay fan, have been for a long time, going back, you know, Brett Favre and all that. But yeah, no, ready to see Aaron get healthy and do something different than he did last year.
Would you, as a Green Bay fan, want him back? Or are you pretty excited about Jordan Love's potential?
Dude, I mean, it's hard to ask for much more than what we saw this year. Like, they've got something coming together, and I'm pretty happy to see that. Because, yeah, everyone thought, you know, once Aaron's out, like, it's just going to hit rock bottom, and it didn't.
I will say that Green Bay made a deal with the devil, because if you look at their franchise, they draft Jordan Love, they draft Aaron Rodgers, they draft Brett Favre.
Yep.
There's no franchise that has gone that long with a QB1 like that. And I think they made a deal with the devil, or they sold their kidney to him, one of the two.
It's possible. And I was laughing how, you know, Aaron Rodgers totally screwed you on your fantasy team this year. And I drafted Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce thinking I was a genius. And then what do they do during the regular season? Like, not much. And then they win the Super Bowl. Like, do I not get fantasy points for winning the Super Bowl?
No, you don't.
This setup is rigged.
The harsh reality from Chris.
Can I trade a kidney for a win here in fantasy? I mean, how many kidneys do I have again?
I think at this point we have 7. All right, Chris, let's see if you can lie to us here. Maybe that'll be the prize as a kidney if we can pull this off. Number one, I've served/worked in worship production for over 20 years now. Toby, do you think that face has been in production for 20 years? Is he even old enough for that?
You know, under that beard, he might be 22, but at least with the beard, it makes him look like he's in his 30s now. So,
And people in production are starting at 8 years old anymore. So
that's
who knows?
True. That's true.
Number two, I've shaken the hand of Chuck Norris and lived to talk about it.
Blake, I'm sure you know who Chuck Norris is. Do you get the whole like reference of Chuck Norris is the baddest man on the planet?
Toby, did you know that Chuck Norris has to spin kick his face? Cause only Chuck Norris can cut Chuck Norris. So he can only he can shave himself.
Okay.
I love Chuck Norris.
You're with us.
I have a black belt, man. I love Chuck Norris. Number three, I've been to 36 states and lived in 6 states over the years.
Okay. I almost feel like based on all of our other guests who have talked about how many states they've been to, 36 isn't very impressive.
Number four, I used to live in Spain and Portugal.
Okay.
Number five, those aren't states though. Number five, I've flown a plane. Number six, I started mixing audio at the age of 13.
Hmm.
There's a lot of numbers in these. I typically like to go for the one number one.
Okay, Blake, I'll let you go first.
That is code for Toby doesn't feel strong on one because he would have claimed it. I am going to say he has not lived in Spain and Portugal. That's my lock.
Okay. And if you would guess mine, I was going to guess that one.
Oh, good. I usually win.
Have mine. I'm going to say that he's never flown a plane.
All right,
I mean,
Chris.
He certainly looks like a man that can, but let's find out.
We're locked in. Does that beard fly a plane or did that beard live in Portugal and Spain?
This beard has flown a plane.
Ah.
Okay. And this beard also lived in Spain, but not Portugal.
Oh, Blake.
Yes.
Blake, you won one.
I thought it too.
I got him, man. He didn't believe it.
I thought two different states or two different countries, nation states was quite a lot. How long did you live in those places?
So back during the early 90s, Desert One and all that, my dad and, you know, a lot of the Navy had a lot of, you know, presidents moving out towards Spain. So we lived there for 3 years and moved back to Florida after that.
Okay, I'm just going to jump right to the one I really want to talk about. It's Chuck Norris. Where'd you meet Chuck and get to shake his hand?
So that was while I was at Liberty University, and he was a commencement speaker 1 year, and I happened to be supporting that event, and so I was there and backstage, and you know, when you have guests come in, they get to hang out, and he decided I was worth talking to, so I was like, oh my gosh, you know, usually you just don't. You know, you don't break that line, you know, you give people space and everything. And so it was a cool moment, you know, because I've watched all the reruns, you know, like I can't tell you how many times it's like, oh, yeah, no, but you've been on in my house for a long time growing up. Like, you know, USA was the network of choice.
And how was that hand grip?
And is that actually your lie? Because I don't think you would have that hand left anymore. I think that he's lying to us, Tobes.
Well, that was the hook, was, you know, I lived to talk about it. So, yeah, man, it was great. It was, I mean, everything you would expect from a Chuck Norris handshake. I'll say that.
Man. Well, it sounds like that hand must be very strong at this point. There's really no segue from strong hands to being in production.
How about, you know, strong? It's going to take a strong hand to fly a plane.
There we go.
So did you, you know, have you flown more than one plane? Did you take flying lessons? What's going on there?
It was flying lessons. Absolutely. I, at one point thought that was going to be something that, I'd spend more and more time doing, and, ended up moving not long after my first, your first flight, you know, kind of experience. And so, yeah, didn't pick it back up after that. You know, most production guys in church world, you do your budget and go, oh yeah, that's not in the cards for me.
Yeah.
I can't afford that hobby.
So I want to know, I am scared of flying as a passenger, but I often wonder, like, if I took flying lessons, is it more about control? You know, if I had control of the plane, would I feel comfortable? What do you think, Chris?
I think it is. It's no different than, you know, driving or maybe riding a bike, where like if you're in control, you feel like things are probably a little more put together than they are. And whoever's riding next to you is, you know, either stomping for the brake or, you know, wishing you weren't, you know, coming in, you know, as low as you are, you know, on approach or something like that.
All right, guys, I got a question for you both. I've been watching Masters of the Air on Apple Plus.
Okay.
It's been a great
show.
Now. And when the planes are going down, they have parachutes, they jump out. And I'm like, oh man, that looks so intense, and they're fine. I mean, well, you hope so when you land. And I thought, why don't we in 2024, when you fly in a plane, wouldn't it be better to give us all a parachute in case it went down? That'd make me feel safer. Do you think we should give people, you know, parachutes on planes?
How about just the option?
Yeah. Like that made me feel better. If you're like, hey, if this goes down, we'll just, you know, eject you. Like just drop my seat out. I've got a parachute.
Of course, in commercial flights, there is no ejection seat built in. They'd have to build them in. Like the whole roof would have to come off for everybody to pop out of there. I'm sure you'd end up killing more people doing that than just, you know, trying to fly safely.
Chris, would you pull that lever if you had the chance, or would you wait for the pilot to take you down?
Man, I don't know. I think if you give everybody the chance to take a parachute, you're going to find some goober who decides they're the first one to jump just because they need to prove to themselves they could, or they want to be on the news or whatever. So no, I think, I mean, if you're in a fighter jet, yeah. Pull the ripcord if you need it. But if you're in a general aviation, you know, craft, like that's a formula for disaster.
I'm going to keep pushing for this. That'll be my platform when I run for governor.
And Blake, I think that you and I should do a live episode from a plane in which I am flying and you are riding shotgun.
Ooh, I don't know. Only if I get to hold a shotgun because I need to feel safe. But what would make me feel really safe is knowing that Chris was running the board at church. So Chris, give me a bit of your background. What led you to your current role? How'd you get in church production? How'd you land the plane into the sound booth?
Man, I had no idea what I was doing. I think that's how most of us start. It's like you're either coming at it from, you know, a company background and you're doing event production and eventually you're needed in a certain seat, you know, or if it's in the church world, chances are somebody had to call in sick or didn't show up. And it's like, you know, you're thrust into an opportunity. And so that was kind of my story. I ended up just kind of rolling cables and helping out back during, like, you know, my junior high years. And, without really knowing what I was getting into, I found myself in a broadcast booth at one point, mixing for what was going to be a broadcast on local radio. And wasn't really sure that I was going to be any good at it, just thought it was interesting and cool and stuff that I was learning, you know, progressively as I went. And I'll never forget one day the church secretary ran a note up to the booth I was in, and it was just feedback from the radio station. And they said, whatever you're doing, keep it up. This is the best this has sounded in like forever. And, you know, as a young kid, you know, trying to learn the way, it's like, what kind of encouragement is that? You know, like I should have framed that. I have no idea where that note's gone. But yeah, so that's kind of how I got my start, was just being around, being willing to help. And now, you know, God's done with it what he would.
I love, because we've been talking on socials a bit recently about a lot of comments that audio engineers at churches get that are highly negative. And so for you to get a comment card that was like, whatever you're doing, keep doing it, that's seems very backwards from what our brethren usually experience on Sunday mornings.
On that note, I think it's funny that the note didn't come from inside the church. The encouragement didn't come from someone in the room. It was somebody totally outside making a comment towards the church.
At some point, we need to do a podcast that all the techs, they just play it for their congregation. Hey, this is how to encourage your tech director and like give them good feedback and be nice to them. And instead of a Sunday service, they mute the pastor's mic, they play that podcast. We need better comments coming from inside of the chapel. We're doing, I don't know when this is going to come out. We're doing Church Tech Madness, craziest comments you've ever gotten. And Chris, we've gotten some crazy ones already. Like, I can't even believe some of these things are said to people.
So yeah, don't worry. I've got plenty of negative ones too, but that's, that's the first one I'll mention just as kind of, you know, in the early years.
So Chris, you studied finance and got an MBA. So, without talking too much about how big a nerd you are, how has that background helped you in your role now in production? It's very unusual for a production director to have that background.
Exactly. Yeah. This is not a linear career path. It never really started out that way, and it's definitely not going to land that way now. But I would say, the MBA just proves that I'm a glutton for punishment.
I was going to say,
I definitely graduated with a finance undergrad and not a very impressive GPA at that rate. But I walked away from that experience knowing that there was an awareness to finance as an area of study that I just felt totally, you know, walking into university, I was totally underprepared for. And so learning a little bit about accounting, learning a little bit about finance, it was pretty clear to me, like in the business realm, the biggest challenge is finance and I need to be there, you know? And so in a way my mindset became finance is applied accounting. It's what do I do with the numbers and my understanding, you know? And so, yeah. And then after I graduated with that degree, I actually moved to Nashville for a time and did, you know, tried to get on tours and did one-offs and did stuff that was no way related to the degree. And so at one point I just kind of had that moment. It's like, well, if I'm going to go for an MBA or an advanced degree, like I'm going to have to, you know, cut and make that decision. And if I'm, you know, paying my dues and working in Nashville, that's going to be a very hard decision to make one day. So when things were slow and it was around the time of like the Nashville flood, you know, that was an easy moment to go like, everything is slow. Now it's the time to get back in school.
And I love how 90% of our listeners and our guests say, yeah, I tried college for like 3 days and then dropped out because I just wanted to start touring. And then they come to Nashville. And so you instead get all this you know, education and then do the same thing.
Exactly. Glutton for punishment. Yeah. No, that's exactly what happened.
But has the finance background helped you in church now? Because as we were kind of alluding to at the start, there's so much finance in production. I have been as shocked at that as I was by the finance and marketing. I'm like, can't we just do fun things? Why do we have to account for them? Like, it's kind of the production boogeyman. So let's just talk about some of the scary things of it. Like, how can you simplify it for us, Chris? What's an operating budget versus a capital expenditure? I mean, how do you even do this stuff?
Yeah, so I would say finance is a huge part of church life in general. Don't care how big your church is or maybe how small it is, but especially when it comes to production, you know, there's dollar signs and often big dollar signs attached to things. And so being able to articulate, you know, among leadership and among the team that you have, you know, what is your operating budget? And, you know, how do you delineate what's capital and what's not? You know, a lot of that is cultural, and you need to understand what your organization has already decided, because a lot of times those rules are made well before you get to have an opinion. And so in our context here at Northside, pretty much every year we revisit what our operating budget is. There is no, you know, hey, carry over last year, add a percentage, and here's your new baseline. Like, we don't operate that way. It's a little more of a zero base kind of idea. So every year you need to project, you know, based on X number services, Y number of special events, whatever your consumables are and that kind of thing. You've got to be able to defend your math. And then I think capital is probably one of the fuzziest conversations for people, because let's just be honest, like, a lot of teams have turnover, you know, every 3, 4, 5 years. And when you have systems that are, you know, maybe 7 to 10 or even 15 years, you know, in their projected life cycle, you may have had 3 different people in that role since the original decision was made. And so, you know, chances are the team really hasn't carried the vision that far forward. And so the sense of ownership, you know, when it comes to capital is sometimes lacking.
Okay. So if I'm going to be vulnerable here, if I'm a production director and I'm in a new role, I'm going to look at, you know, whatever my operating budget is. I'm going to say, could it be anywhere from like zero to, I'm assuming there are churches so large that they might have $100,000 or even more of operating budget. And I'm thinking like, okay, my audio console's a bit outdated. I want a new one. I'm going to see if I can sneak it into my operating budget. And all of a sudden I can't buy batteries because I spent my whole budget. So like, how do you clarify some of those things of like, you know, what is operating versus what is capital? Because I don't know the difference.
And if I was Toby, I'd do the same thing. And that I was like, oh, Toby must be looking at my budget right now.
Totally get it. Yeah. I think the best way maybe to explain it is if you are considering your operating budget, you're looking at what you need to operate for the year. Or maybe you have different terms. You know, some churches will budget on a 6-month basis or an 18-month basis. But for most of us, it's about a year. And so the goal would be you're spending those dollars in the course of the year doing the things and serving the ministries that you have in your church. Capital is the long game. Capital is assets that have much longer shelf life, things that will serve the ministry year over year in a different way than the gaff tape and the batteries you bought, you know, top of the year.
Toby, am I operating budget or am I a capital expenditure?
I just remember asking Dan and he said you were the one that's expendable, whatever it was, if it's above the line or below the line, you were the one that's expendable.
Ooh, I'm in the expendables.
But
I like that.
But if it makes you feel better, so am I somehow as the owner of the company.
For real?
Yeah. But like, you know, our drivers, our like shipping team, our operations crew, they're not expendable. So I was like, this is fascinating. I don't know what this all means, but I guess you and I could just be cut at any moment.
Did you just tell Dan, hey, you're just a bean counter. So whatever you, whatever, man, whatever.
So Chris, give us a little advice on how, you know, leadership hands down. And I know Northside functions a little differently, but I'm sure a lot of churches, leadership just hands down your operating budget. Here's your operating budget for next year. And so how do production leaders build up the trust that they need to then have conversations with their leadership team to say, hey, this is not going to let us operate, at least for the vision that you have laid out for the next year? How do they build that trust to have those hard conversations?
That's a huge topic, man. And I think at some level, you know, whether you're new in the role on a given year, or maybe you have a leadership change, you know, whatever the case, at some point, you're probably going to get given a budget. And it's just like, okay, I've got to make do. And maybe there's enough margin to get it done. Maybe there's not. But I think that trust conversation is so huge, because at the end of the day, if your leadership doesn't really want to have a conversation with you about anything, it's going to be hard to have a conversation with you about something as sensitive as dollars and cents. And so I think the encouragement I would give people is, make sure you understand and you articulate with your leadership that you understand the vision, because the budget has to be shaped around a goal. And if you'd have different goals, you know, if you're trying to, you know, build the biggest, baddest thing you've ever seen in a, you know, production magazine or in somebody's YouTube video, chances are that's not your leadership's vision. And so that's where you're going to find a huge disconnect, and trust is on the line. And so, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that, like, you've got to show that you're aligned well, in order to get to those places of high trust.
Oh, has that helped you then, Chris, to kind of speak budget language in terms of vision? I heard you say that.
Absolutely.
And that sounds very helpful.
Absolutely. I think it's Summit. Summit has a great line where they talk about, gear follows vision. And so I'll steal that from them all day long. But the idea comes back to, it's not just gear, it's budget, it's initiative, it's energy, it's time. You know, so many things follow vision. And if they don't, at some point you're going to have a gap. And as a leader, you're going to be stuck with the bill for that. So, yeah.
And Chris, do you feel like you have that level of trust in your position where you can go back to your leadership team and say, hey, I know that you've budgeted this for your vision, at least as far as production equipment or whatever it is, but it's going to cost this. I can do it for this, but it's not going to match your vision.
Absolutely. I would say today, I would say we have that trust, and I think it's something you build. It's not something you arrive at, you know, you just turn a corner and all of a sudden you've earned the right, but you have to steward that relationship and steward that influence well. And it honestly helps when you get to kind of, you know, walk down the years with a leadership team that you've, you know, slowly built that trust, and you've also proven that you handle, you know, projects and initiatives well, because that also just kind of increases their trust that you can do the job and that the competency is there. And so, yeah, like relationally, if there's a disconnect, it doesn't matter how competent you are, that's going to be a problem, but you've got to work through that and build that trust.
Blake, I don't know if we built that trust yet. I kept, you know, like the mantra of, I want you to do a lot with a little, but you've managed to do a little with nothing.
Well, you know, you gave me $10 in 2023 and I got $20 approved for 2024. So I am riding high on that money. I got to tell y'all, I really, before we started this podcast, I never would have guessed a church tech podcast would have so much about vision and relationships. Like, it is so wild to me that we're even talking about finance, but it all still comes back to vision and relationships with leadership.
And I wonder, you know, Chris, every year you're looking at line items on your operating budget of, like, I don't know if you guys are still using lamp-based projectors, but a lot of churches are, where you're looking at these, you know, cost lines and saying, hey, these are still on here that we had 5-10 years ago. That's fine. Is this still your vision? You want to keep paying for this? Because here are some other options. We can go laser projectors, we can go LED, we can whatever, to change the way this functions. Are you, you know, revisioning those things every single year?
Yeah, I would say the conversation, you know, because the budget is just a tool to get you to a healthy conversation around where you're putting your dollars and cents. So when it comes to those relationships and conversations with leadership, If it's not an ongoing conversation, I'm just going to tell you, you're missing out. You don't always need to bring it to money. I'll tell you that right now. If leadership sees you coming down the hall and they avoid you because they know you're just after the dollar you need to get your next, you know, great idea going, like that's going to be a problem. But at some point, if you can't have those conversations around, hey, here's this tech I'm learning about, I think it's going to help us this way, or, you know, here's something that I think, you know, ROI is a great conversation with leadership. If you can ever say, hey, like house lights is a conversation for us right now. We're looking at moving our last venue over from traditional house lights to LED. And, the selling point to this is not, you know, the cool points of, oh, we can do, you know, any color we want. We can, you know, have, you know, all this multi-channel, you know, freedom in programming. It's not even that. It's actually, hey, the break even on this is here. And beyond that, we're saving a tremendous amount of money just in utilities. And the bigger the room you have, the more that, you know, that cost scales. And so that's the kind of thing that, I don't think many production leaders would naturally think to bring up. And yet, if you want to see your leadership get on board with something real quick, show them how you can save them money.
I was just going to say, like, it's all how you frame it, whether you're going to sell the vision or not. You know, if you frame it to executive leadership, hey, we can, you know, change colors in our house lights and set up different scenes. And they're thinking, okay, that, you know, if we could do that, sure, but we don't have the money right now. But if you reframe it to, hey, within this amount of time, you're actually going to save money on all of our utilities and replacing bulbs and lift rentals and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you've got to learn how to sell the vision.
And man, I just want to reaffirm what Chris said about not spontaneously talking about this, whether it's about your budget or your own personal money. If I learned anything from the salary series we did on this, these are all sit down planned conversations. These are never spur of the moment. That booby trapping does not sit well with people. But Chris, if I was going to sit down, one last budget question for me is, like, I know I need an audio console in 5 years, or I know I need a video. I need something that's big. And that's never happened. That's not talked about. How do you suggest to the person listening to this, it's like, that's me. How do they get that approved? How do they get that projected?
Absolutely. That's a fantastic question. And I think you have to know where your culture is in that moment as to maybe how bring up the best, you know, avenue to that question. Because if you're in a culture that, you know, has people that are high on planning and, you know, they're quick to talk about long range vision, then it's probably going to be a fairly easy conversation. And it might even start with you just asking, hey, this is a need that I'm seeing and it's not here today. It's, you know, X number of years ahead. And just ask, you know, as a coaching kind of point, hey, how would you encourage me to think on this? And how do you want me to communicate with you on this? And you'll be surprised, I think, how quickly leadership can help you frame, you know, how they want you to think and communicate on those things. And if you're coming from a place maybe that doesn't plan as well, and you feel like you're going to be, you know, kind of that novelty of pressing in and giving them ideas, and they're going like, man, I don't know what song we're playing next week. I don't want to hear about a financial need in 5 years. Then chances are your best tool is to actually start thinking through and writing a proposal. And that proposal could be, you know, something that you get input on from, you know, other coworkers, or something that you get input on from another TD at another church, maybe that's walked that road before and kind of, you know, navigated the language. But I think there's usually two ways that gets tackled, and it's either going to be a CapEx conversation and you already have some structure for CapEx spending, or in churches that are really understructured, you may want to bring up talks around sinking funds. And the idea around sinking fund is just, hey, I see something, let's say 5 years in the future. For the next 5 years, we're going to start saving and putting away money for that end. And we're not going to touch it. We're not going to pull on it early. It's not for any other thing than this need we see coming. And so where there's a lack of structure, I think that's where it's hardest, because not many churches have a savings account they're willing to let their technical needs touch.
Blake, were you just for a second thinking to yourself, what the heck is CapEx?
Guys, I got a C in accounting too. I'm fine to say that. So yeah, CapEx, is that like Elon Musk's savings account product?
And Blake, I love that you just admitted you got a C in accounting. Whereas when you first started here, you're like, hey, I took college accounting. I know what, like, how to take care of money.
Did I say that?
Oh yeah, totally. You were a very, you know,
slap that guy. Yeah. Slap him.
I'm going to go back in time.
Please.
And slap old Blake.
We saw Back to the Future. This is called Slap to the Future.
So Chris, we're going to shift gears a little bit. Talk about building teams. Unfortunately, I have failed in doing that, as you see my co-host here.
All right, A-host.
So this is another thing that can be very unnatural for production leaders. They, you know, they get into a role at a church. It's because they're technically minded. They know how to operate a sound system or video system. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, you've got to build a volunteer squad, and you've got to build a culture and an onboarding process and training and all this. So was this something that you have had to learn from the ground up, or did it come natural to you? And what do you guys do at Northside?
It's a great question. I don't think team building really comes natural to to all that many people, and especially to introverts. I can't think of a single introvert that would say like, oh yeah, I build teams all the time for fun, you know? I think when it comes to tech, there's a humble awareness to the fact that ministry can eat you up and chew you out. And there's no one person in any role in the church that has the capacity to answer all the needs of that role. And that's a humbling moment. You know, that thought is hard, and it'll take the rock star mindset right out of you. You know, like, it is not about my performance anymore. And so one book I'll plug real quick on this, if anybody wants to get into it, Sticky Teams by David Osborne, or Larry Osborne, there we go, has a really cool structure on this and a cool thought on this. And it's that, you know, church cultures are often, you know, shaped by their size in a way that you can kind of compare to sports. And so if you think about a small, you know, church plant, you could probably make the comparison to like a golf team. It's still a team, but it's very much based on individual performance. And when you get to certain other sizes, you might look more like a basketball team or more like a football team. And then you start getting into specialty and all this cool stuff. And the reason I bring that up is when you're thinking about a team, the point of a team is that they can do more than one person can do. They're cross-trained and their experience is way broader than yours. And that's what you need. Because not only will, you know, the appetite of ministry burn you out if you don't learn to say no, but also there's more need than what your specialization has to offer. And so I don't care what your background is, at some point, if you're going to be leading in production, you've got to learn to lead people that are more gifted than you in certain areas. And that's a really good thing.
It's a humbling thing. Like, we do these little videos once a week, and I had to realize I was not the funniest guy in the room, and that was hard at first. Mm-hmm. But then it was really fun to get to facilitate the funniest guys in the room. So that was a tough one for me, Chris. I resonate there.
And it's also fun as well. I've done this, Blake, a whole lot over the last 3.5 years with church here, of realizing, oh, I'm not as good at that thing as so-and-so, and then paring down what I do and focus on, to now I'm like, oh, I get to focus on the things that God designed me to do, and I'm better than everybody out here. It's so focused, but I get to do that all day long. Like, that's so much better than trying to, you know, do other people's jobs that they're better at.
Oh, tech. Yeah. I mean, now nobody eats tacos except for Toby. I mean, nobody eats a taco better.
I focus on lunch. That's my full-time job now.
It's got that lunch money.
Chris, do you guys have specific onboarding process? Like, what's, you know, step one for, you know, staff member or volunteer that comes into the production team?
Yeah. I would say, our process is evolving. It's growing. We're learning things. And even in the last couple of months, we've been dialoguing around how to make some of the process clearer, you know, to people that may have a desire to serve, but they don't really have any kind of specialty or background, you know, where they're bringing a certain thing, skill set, you know, to the table. And so that's kind of where, as I look at this, that's part of the beauty of the team dynamic. And I think that's where, like, the sports analogy may fall apart a little bit even, is if you're inviting people to serve, a lot of people are going to come in and go, where do you need me? You know, they have a heart to serve, but they may not have a certain skill set you really need. And so the beauty in that moment is you get to create an environment, and we use language like shadowing, where before there's any responsibility on that volunteer, they're placed in a environment where they usually get to connect with one or two people that are already serving, hang with them through a couple services, maybe an entire weekend, and they get to see, how is this working out? You know, is this the kind of work I could see myself doing? But also relationally, they're going like, man, I'm getting to meet all these great people, and I'm seeing how they're interacting. And so the social dynamic becomes, I think, a big selling point. And then, you know, the follow-up conversation is going, where do you feel like you want to start? You know, and one of my aha moments, I'll say, in the last year or two has been just how critical it is, or beneficial it can be, to invite people onto your team before you even worry about what role they're in. You know, telling people, oh, we need an audio guy, so I'm waiting for that audio guy. It's like, well, God may be bringing 3 or 4 people to your ministry that need your community, that need, you know, to be involved in different ways. And if you're not, you know, walking around with eyes ready for that, you're going to be missing out in a big way. And so the thing that we've seen just tremendous fruit from is kind of opening our mindset and going, no, Let's get people in, let's shadow, and let's get them socially connected. And then you're on the team well before we're even worried about your first training, or maybe you're cross-training and learning a new skill. Like, all those things are secondary to the decision to serve and being then equipped to do it.
Do you guys have any, I know you're a book guy and you mentioned sticky teams. Is there any book that you hand new volunteers or new staff members? You're like, here, please read this first.
As a staff, we absolutely read all kinds of stuff together, and our leadership team's great about that. We've, in the last year, read stuff like Herding Tigers and Turn the Ship Around was a great one. And so absolutely, we're on that wavelength. When it comes to volunteers, there's a couple things that I'll do to try to gauge like how bought in they want to be. And so I almost never come out of the gate with like, here's your homework, here's your here's your reading material, here's your stuff. As we're developing and changing some of our processes, what we're trying to do is build kind of, even just through a basic splash page kind of tool, we're trying to build some digital resources that we can put in front of our team and just say, hey, these are trusted voices. And this is, you know, whether it's an in-house, you know, content that we've developed, or if it's something as quickly available as YouTube, the point is, you know, I don't want to send the average volunteer to YouTube and tell them, hey, go learn audio. Like, that's not going to end well.
Yeah.
But if I can put them in front of tools like MXU, we do use MXU for some of our higher power volunteers and folks that really are ready to dig in, you know.
Who's MXU? I've never heard of them.
I mean, yeah, they're new.
It's I'm just okay. kidding.
So yeah, we definitely have a couple different you know, tools that we use in that space.
Do you guys have any specific like team building event kind of things? Like every quarter we have a production all staff party or something. How do you guys approach that? Just the relationship side.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'll say this too. It's not just the quarterly or the semi-annual, you know, volunteer appreciation thing, or maybe a big team night. You know, we do about 3 to 4 of those a year where it's worship and production together. If you've ever tried to get a party going with just a bunch of introverts, it's not always what you think it's going to be.
It's a middle school
and so
dance.
There's a exactly. It's usually better to partner with and to hang out with the same people that you're hanging with on the weekend. And I always kind of just have a moment of reflection when I'm at those events, and I get to see who's actually hanging out together, who's actually talking and sharing stories together. Cause it's not necessarily the people you would think, but usually there's that mixture of introverts and extroverts and, you know, people that kind of bring the best out of each other in that space. And so I don't think I would do it any other way.
Blake, I'm thinking of like our church gear gatherings, and obviously we have a mixture of introverts and extroverts, but I feel like our culture doesn't let you be much of an introvert.
Which is ironic because most of the people that work at church gear are introverts.
Yeah. But like when we all get together, it's like, if you're not engaging and talking, like we're going to almost force you to in a fun way because we love you.
You'll catch a stray zinger, you know, yeah. Just.
But I love that concept of, you know, bring together the worship and production people to like liven the party up. I mean, the party wouldn't happen without the production people, but also like, you know, we wouldn't get silly without the worship people.
Yeah. The party would be on the calendar with the production people. The party would, you know, yeah, have some ruckus with the worship people.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. And I think the thing that's cool about that, and kind of to your previous question, is that's also just a part of our culture. Every weekend, I know every church is different in this regard. You know, if you have multiple services or maybe over multiple days, but the way we're structured, our calendar and our schedule and the flow on those days of services, we've got a decent amount of time between services. And so we encourage our people to hang out in the lobby together, to connect in the green rooms together, to be, you know, kind of a worship family. And so, you know, if you're sitting at your post for, you know, 20 minutes from, you know, the first service to the second service, and you're not doing anything, like that's a red flag. And we're going to notice that, you know, cause we want people to be in community and living life together. And so that's the nice thing about, you know, some of the team nights and the bigger things we do, is it's really just an upscaled version of what we already do on a weekend and what we're looking for and what we want to build.
Man, that is so good for team building. And like you say, that'd be a red flag if they weren't engaging. And another thing that would be a red flag is if there was a disaster on a Sunday morning or maybe a Wednesday evening, whenever it happens. You know, what do you do when a tech disaster happens at your church? Can you give us a moment where everything went wrong? How did you handle it? How'd you recover? How'd you address it with leadership afterwards if that conversation had to happen? You got any disaster stories for us?
Oh, I've got a bunch, man. The one that
we got all night.
The one, I was going to say, we're going to redo this whole episode. We're going to do a second episode. It's just disasters with Chris.
Yeah, just disaster stories. I've got them. Here we go. No, the one that popped out to me first was actually one that happened within the first few months of me landing here. And I was learning the team, learning leadership. We had one of our really capable, really strong front of house guys mixing for a night of worship that we do kind of every Thanksgiving. And so the rehearsals had gone great the night before. We bring in dinner and kind of do a bigger thing on those. And so then we get into the day of, and like, it's like a 6:30, maybe 7 o'clock kickoff. And so the band's running in like at five, you know, after, you know, work, and we're just going for it. And so we get through the rehearsal, we open doors, we're into the first set, maybe, I don't know, 2-3 songs into the set. And out of nowhere, the PA just dies. We go from probably like 95, 98A, somewhere in there, to nothing. And, you know, at that moment, I'm definitely panicking. Yeah. And I'm not in a seat that day. I am kind of hanging with the team, but I'm not mixing, I'm not producing. So I'm kind of in that, you know, free space where I can respond and I can go put out a fire. So immediately my brain goes into overthink mode, and I'm kind of like running through the system and what probably is the issue. And at the time we had a legacy product doing our DSP control for the PA.
Okay.
And in my mind, that was the most likely solution, was that the DSP had either crashed or, you know, something would need to be rebooted or what have you. So, you know, the whole room's, you know, full, people are standing and worshiping. And so without like trying to run like a madman, I'm trying to be pretty quick and make my way from the booth to backstage and then on a second floor where the amp room was. And I'm about halfway through the room when the PA comes back. And of course, when you're in these moments and, you know, you're thinking five alarm fire, it's probably only been 20, 30 seconds, but to me, it's been 5 minutes and,
yeah,
you know, my job's on the line and I'm probably about to get fired. So
a sniper is on your back right there from leadership.
Yes. You, whether it's real or not, you feel the pressure. And so, I make my way back up to the booth and I'm like, what the freak happened? Explain this to me, please. And the short story was our front of house guy that day had used virtual sound check. And so with the console we have, virtual sound check is a mode they call rehearsal mode. And you hit a magic button on the desk and it lets you kind of, you know, pipe in all of your pre-recorded, you know, rehearsal or what have you. And in this particular manufacturer, when you ran that rehearsal mode, if it ran out of content, if there was no more input from the virtual side, at some point it would let the live inputs pass, but it would stay in rehearsal mode. And so that's what happened. The console was in rehearsal mode all the way through. Yeah, all the way through probably a 30-minute window, 40-minute window. And at some point it had basically timed out and it decided, you know what? I'm only going to let digital inputs through. I'm not going to take the analog inputs anymore. And so just like that, it basically shut itself down. And as I had run off thinking I'm going to go fix the PA, you know, my front of house guy looked down and goes, oh, there we go. And he hits the button and kicks out rehearsal mode. And, you know, so that's one of those moments where I probably lost a few years and it'll yep. stick with me for a long time. If I'm ever mixing, you bet I'm looking out for that button.
So at the beginning of that night, you had a full head of hair. And then at the end,
I had dreads and everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny in those moments. You feel like, you know, I'm going to be the superhero because I'm the smartest guy in the room. And it's like, oh, nope. The other guy figured it out way before me. And glad I'm building a good team of people around me.
Absolutely. And that's also a humbling moment because as a leader, I'm having to go to a team that I don't know that well, you know, I'm the new guy and I'm going, help me understand this, because even if everything is fine, I know that, you know, whether it's that night or Monday morning, I'm going to probably have to explain this to leadership. And if I don't understand it, the chances of it happening again are much higher than I'm willing to admit. And so that's just a humbling moment. You have to kind of go and say, here's what I learned and here's how I'm not going to let it happen again, you know?
Yeah.
But I'll say leadership was very gracious towards us with that. And, yeah, it was definitely a telling moment, not just for the team and me with the team, but also for me to kind of get a better perspective on like, how does my leadership handle, you know, technical issues, and are they coming out with guns blazing? And thankfully they were not, they were very gracious.
Yeah, I think that's a great opportunity early on in your tenure to realize what the culture is going to be like there and to, you know, show who you yourself are going to be during that culture.
Absolutely right.
Okay, Chris. So you having an MBA, we think that you must be our smartest guest ever. So we're going to assume that your tech takeaway is the most brilliant piece of advice ever. And so Blake and I are going to judge it 1 to 10 after. No, I'm just kidding. But we would love to pull one more bit of wisdom out of your beautiful brain and give us a tech takeaway, just an overarching piece of advice that would make all of our listeners' Sunday better.
Man, that's a huge setup. I don't know if I can live up to the hype.
I made sure.
I do have a tech. I've got a takeaway for you for sure. I think this kind of goes with the being humble piece, just the mindset of being a student. You know, remember that you never really graduate. And in so many ways, the people that are successful that you see take steps to the next level, whatever that is in their profession, they're usually students. And by that, I mean, they're students of their systems, they're students of their people, they're students of their leadership. And they also stay in the word. They're students, you know, in their faith. And so I think if I could go back and coach my younger self at all, it would be around those things. It's like, when you think you've got it figured out, you're actually really far off.
Man, that is such good advice. I was recently watching a video on this guy that was saying, here's the 9 steps to being a good marketing person. And I was like, you know, college kind of tricks us. It makes us think we're done learning. They don't say that, but subliminally you're like, oh, I'm done with that phase. Mm-hmm. So I really love that tech takeaway to always be a student, always be learning. That's good. That's good, Chris.
And Blake, you're kind of a dichotomy in the fact that you think you know everything, but at the same time, you're like, I'm still learning every single day.
I think here's the thing. I have so much confidence. I think I know everything until I realize I know nothing. So then I quickly learn as much as I can mm-hmm. on that to not know nothing. Did I say that right?
Absolutely not.
Chris, is there something you would like people to know, since I clearly don't know anything? Give me something here on what you'd like to plug, what you'd like to send people to. We appreciate you giving us some time. So I want to point people your way if you'd like, or if you're like, hey, I'm good, you know, feel free to say that as well.
Yeah, I'm not terribly active on social media, but y'all can find me on Instagram or Facebook. Links will be in the notes and all that stuff. Yeah, if you want to check out Northside, we're online just about everywhere you would expect. And you can find our services and Nights of Worship and all that great stuff on YouTube. So if you want to connect, reach out.
Sweet. Well, thank you for joining us, man.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks for hanging out with us. We hope to see you back next week for more absurd stories, tech takeaways, and overall buffoonery here at the Church Gear Studios.
So, Blake, I know this won't come out on the same day that we're recording, but we are recording on February 23rd, and today's my dad's birthday.
Hey, happy birthday, Jim.
So I feel like turn the tables around and just say to my dad, shut up, fat boy.
You go to therapy for once, Jim, after
That's
what
right.
you did to Toby.
And hey, if it's somebody else's birthday, I feel like, you know, the first thing you want to do is you want to shout it out on social media.
Yeah, and like, if it was our birthday today, which, you know, might as well be, you'd shout us out on social media.
I don't know that Church Gear has set an actual birthday, but we should decide when that day is and then just start shouting it out on social media.
This might be too inside baseball, but I literally said last week, we have an anniversary, but we need to decide if Toby agrees that's the anniversary. And so if you were going to give us an anniversary present, it'd be to post this on Instagram, tag us, or hey, just text it to a friend and say, you know, you don't know anything about budget, so you really need to hear this today.
And shut up, fat boy.
Oh my.
Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.